Kapka Kasavova, welcome to KBOO.
Hello, thank you.
Yeah, well, your new book has been met with rave reviews for its gripping historical sweep and lyrical style, and its close attention to the inventiveness of people living under repressive conditions in the borderlands of Europe. It's been described as both a memoir and a travelogue, and unfolds as a return to what you clearly envision as a very enchanting and interesting region on the periphery of your own childhood in Bulgaria. Well, we'll talk a bit on the show today about your insights as they relate to nation wall building in the U.S. and nationalism here. But let's start by having you describe this region, these borderlands of your childhood in Bulgaria and the place that your family fled.
Well, this is really a place where three countries meet, but also two continents. The countries are Greece, Bulgaria, and Turkey, and it's really a continental confluence on the Black Sea. The region has been known since antiquity as Thrace. And this is where I went on a strange kind of fated pilgrimage, I suppose, because even though I didn't grow up in a border zone and my family were not border crossers during the Cold War, border crossing during my childhood, the last 15 years of the Cold War, was a very dangerous thing, and there were always distant rumors of people who had tried to cross, stories. Really, that border, our national border in Bulgaria, was the last southernmost outpost of the Iron Curtain. This was the Iron Curtain in not as a metaphor, but as a physical reality, an electrified barbed fence.
You sometimes distinguish hard borders and soft borders. This was a very hard border during the Cold War.
This is the ultimate hard border. If we judge borders by the degree of vulnerability, the degree of mortality, even that they engender whenever crossers approach them, or even in all innocence, you know, people in all innocence approach them like locals, then this was an ultra hard border, and It took its toll not only on the Bulgarians who lived there, but also on people from the entire so-called Eastern Bloc. Many East Germans, Poles, Czechs had heard that this particular border separating us in the East from the so-called West was the easiest to cross because it's a wilderness, and they went for it, and many of them were shot and killed on the spot by border guards. Yeah, I was also interested in what it was like to live in the border zone. I was interested in meeting locals, people who hadn't chosen to live there, but it was their fate.
And some describe this as the backyard, the back door of Europe, and that there was an understanding and a relationship of people who cross through this region, some fleeing, some being stopped at the borders, and you work with this idea that I found very interesting and perhaps applicable in a broader sense of how not everyone is stopped at the border, that there were different forms of checkpoint, different forms of passage during the Cold War, even in this very harsh and brutal border, that there's an inequality that's manifested in the traffic and border crossing.
Absolutely. Borders are a place of inequality, of borders like this one, of inequality, of injustice, of arbitrariness, of sometimes freak occurrences, and as you said at the beginning, of great inventiveness. And just as today's refugees coming in from the Middle East, from conflict, from war, are trying to cross this border. This is the same border. It's not exactly the same fence. There has been a new fence built by the Bulgarians, but also by the Greeks, to stop the influx of people from Turkey into the European Union. Just as people now are trying to cross through different points, some legally through the official checkpoints, others illegally across the forest, so it was during the Cold War. People from the Eastern Bloc didn't have the opportunity to cross legally. It was simply forbidden to leave the Eastern Bloc, so they went for the illegal option. And some of the stories are extraordinary. There are stories of successful crossings, of unsuccessful crossings, but there is a spectrum of the border experience from the Cold War. And what I found the most interesting was how the locals, how the border people and the border crossers' destinies intertwined, including those of border guards.
And you take up some of the loss of humanity of border guards. Earlier on the show today, there was a discussion of the corrupting effects of the drug wars here on policing and the whole apparatus of policing. And you take up some of that theme in your book as well, how corrupting and dehumanizing these borders are for border guards, as well as people who try to negotiate some form of passage.
Yeah, a hard border. I discovered in my encounters with people, a hard border creates a kind of microculture, a microcosm, really, of the dysfunctional society that it represents, and it continues, as it was the case with this border, this stretch of the Iron Curtain. It continues in its lifetime. Thankfully, the lifetime of every border is finite. That's another thing I discovered. It continues throughout its lifetime to create a kind of a culture of oppression and eventually self-oppression.
Yeah, you take up the border as an object of the human psyche, as an object of the imagination and fantasy, as well as a harsh concrete reality. Can you speak to that theme?
Yeah, I was interested in talking to former Cold War era border guards, and there are a few of them who. Who still carry, a few of them that I met who still carry the wire in their heads, in their hearts, really. They have internalized the border. So not only are they not repentant or even aware of the acts they have committed, sometimes acts of murder, execution of unarmed civilians trying to cross the border, they continue to feel justified. So in doing that, in their sense of having fulfilled their duty of protecting the national border, and that's when you realize that even a generation after a border like that falls, the trauma, the spectral dimensions of the border are still very much there in the psyches of those who were most directly affected by it. And that includes the border crossers. I talked to a man, his story is in the book, from East Germany at the time, who attempted a crossing. And that was almost 40 years ago. And his story is extraordinary of how he has continued all these decades to carry that border in his mind and heart, and how it has affected his life thereafter.
In the West and much of the capitalist world, the project of dismantling borders has been central to neoliberal capitalism, and capital is very mobile, increasingly mobile around the world, and transactions and investments can happen within a nanosecond, and that wealthy people also, and the affluent, have tremendous mobility across borders and through customs in the fast zones of the world. And at the same time, there's been a fortification and a militarizing of borders for everyday people and refugees. Do you see any parallels? Of course, in Eastern Europe during the Cold War, it was not the same project, but do you see any parallels between how you cast the history of this border in Eastern Europe and these inequalities in the global traffic of capital set against refugees who are stopped at various borders? What are the insights you have for this kind of border dynamic we're seeing in much of the world?
I found that that border, my border, was particularly rife in ironies from the past, ironies from the present, and a lot of kind of mirroring going on between the two sides. So, for instance, the refugees who are coming in, trying to come into Europe, the EU, via Turkey today, they're using pretty much the same routes as, the same corridors of movement through the forest, across the mountains, as during the Cold War. It's just that the direction of travel has changed. It is now to the north and the west.
So there's a lot of commercial activity along these are old trade
indeed,
routes as well.
Indeed, ancient, we might say, trade routes, but also medieval drove roads from the Ottoman Empire and so on. And yes, there is still a very lively trade attached to these illegal crossings, in people smuggling, in which, of course, the border police take a cut. And often refugees end up on the wrong side of the border, having been misguided there by a smuggler, and robbed of their last money. So there is tremendous drama and tremendous irony going on in this area, not least because the local towns and villages in Greece, Bulgaria, and Turkey, the border villages, are extremely depopulated from the time of the Cold War. So there is a real shortage of a deficit of humans. You know, all these large village houses, the beautiful villages, standing empty. And at the same time, you know, the local politics issued from the centers of power in these countries are very much against keeping refugees, keeping these people coming across the border in the country. You know, there is a fear and a suspiciousness, about these strangers coming into our territory, when in fact it would be quite a good idea to resettle families in these depopulated villages. It would probably save these countries, like Bulgaria and Greece in particular, from being drained of their lifeblood through extreme emigration and bad governance.
Yeah, well, Kapka Kasabova, your book invites us to share in this journey and to also draw insights that I think go beyond this edge of Europe itself. And I just want to praise you for a wonderful piece of work. It's a riveting read, and it's now available in the U.S. This month. You can purchase Border Journey to the Edge of Europe at a number of bookstores in the U.S., including Barnes & Nobles. Thanks so much for being with us this morning and for your wonderful work, Kapka Kasabova.
Pleasure.